broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Bill Hendry.
This is college. Everyone cheats. Everyone cheats.
Genesis 8, verse 21 and
10. These drinks combine alcohol and caffeine.
Oh, what's that? It's our new computer.
And the 0-1 pitcher on the way to Edgar Martinez.
Shoot from a basket.
Famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch. We don't give up, man. Right on through the looking glass we go, taking you to places other talk shows wish they could go. Our number is 877-876-PHIL in this groundbreaking presentation. 877-876-PHIL. Head over to our website right now to philhendryshow.com and get the other necessary acquisition to listen to our show. And that's a backstage pass. When you do, you are also entitled to watch live streaming video of our show. Why is that important? Because our radio show is the only one in the history of modern radio that's actually worth watching. Oh, there's a lot of great shows. Don't get me wrong. But ours, you got to see as well as listen to. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, and I want to get our affiliate spotlight up here, man, because there are days, you know, not too many of them, that we blow it until the next hour here. San Diego, KFMB 760, a great station, one of the greatest in the country, and one of our great stations on our radio network, KFMB San Diego, and in Syracuse, New York, WMCR 1600 AM, and philhendryshow.com. is the place to go. Later on in the program, some very, very weird news tonight. We have Amazon.com charting a pedophile's guidebook. That's right. A pedophile's guidebook that is apparently selling. Now, it may very well be selling, and I have no doubt that it's selling because people have a morbid curiosity and want to know just exactly what the hell it is Amazon is selling there. But that is the fact, and we'll look at that. Also, alcoholic energy drinks are now banned in Washington State. You know about these drinks, that Four Loko, and there are others. And these are drinks that are being banned because college students are getting a hold of these. It isn't so much that they got 12% alcohol, although that's a pretty decent kick. They have 12% alcohol, and they've got enough caffeine in them to equal a couple of cups of coffee. So that's also pretty weird. We're going to kick off tonight, though, with Glee, the television show Glee, and we're going to welcome to our program for the very first time Ray Berger. Ray is with the Gay Power Trip bus tour, and we're going to talk to Ray about the TV show Glee and about what his organization is doing with this show. And I'll tell you, Glee is a revolutionary television show. There's no question about it. I think that all bets are off. I think everybody, whether you've seen the show or not, you need to know that this show has really broken some ground, not only just in the fact that Ray, and welcome to our program and congratulations. You guys are you're going to be doing quite a bit of traveling, right?
We're going to be doing a lot of traveling, Phil, from Los Angeles up to San Francisco into the Seattle area across the country, visiting a lot of cities where your radio stations and a lot of your fans are, in Louisville and in Memphis and in Miami. And this is all a part of our Gay Power Trip bus tour and is a big part of the television program Glee, which has, as you say, enhanced the ability of gay people to present to those who are not gay what we're about on a certain level and hopefully convince some younger people who are a little bit confused just what we're all about.
All right, well, let's talk about this episode from last night. Glee fans have been speculating for weeks that McKinley High's openly gay student, Kurt, would get his first kiss on last night's episode, which was entitled Never Been Kissed. Now, while it finally happened, it certainly didn't pan out as expected. The scene had been set for Kurt, played by Chris Colfer, to spark up a romance with Blaine, another gay student from a rival Glee Club. Blaine charmed Kurt with his group's rendition of Katy Perry's Teenage Dream, but to the surprise of viewers, it was Karofsky, a Neanderthal football jock, who had been subjecting Kurt to bullying about his sexuality, who locked lips with him.
Absolutely.
So that is what? That's a closeted...
Well, that is a individual who is attracted to the gay lifestyle, but for reasons that probably have an awful lot to do, Phil, with the way he was raised or peer pressure, cannot bring himself to openly admit his attraction to the gay lifestyle.
All right, here is Glee taking on gay bullying on last night's episode. Here, teacher Will Schuster, he counsels Kurt, who's been tormented by this bully.
Is there anything that I could do?
No. This is my hill to climb alone.
Can I be honest? I think it's getting to you. Usually this stuff rolls right off your back, but lately you've been belligerent, angry, pushing people away.
Can I be honest with you? You, like everyone else at this school, are too quick to let homophobia slide. And yes, being the only out gay kid at the school gets me down.
All right, so tell me, Ray, what you and those of you with the gay Power Trip bus tour, what you're doing.
Well, what we're doing is we're watching this episode of Glee, and we're watching other episodes of Glee that have dealt with the theme of an emerging interest in homosexuality and the gay lifestyle. And we're showing the kids these programs and then talking to them about the advantages of being a homosexual. What has happened in the last probably 5 to 10 years with the open public opinion opposed to gay marriage and other issues that are important to gay people, we're seeing an awful lot of gay people entering into these counseling centers where you can become, through therapy, heterosexual, and we're losing our numbers. And the only way to get those numbers back up is to actively go into our middle school and talk to young people about the homosexual lifestyle. What are the advantages? What could be good for them as opposed to going a more traditional heterosexual route?
You're in the middle schools, right?
We're in the middle schools still because by high school, most of these kids have made up their minds. And, of course, Glee is about high school. It's about discussion and open discussion and experimentation and so on with the homosexual lifestyle. We wanted to go to the middle schools because that kind of discussion is really not going on.
Now, these are young kids. You're not talking about sex, are you?
No, we're not talking about sex.
So much as you are talking about what you call the lifestyle of...
That's right. We're talking to them about the advantages of being a homosexual. The community is very strong. The economic advantages of being a homosexual often are very, very good because you are in community with others who are advanced and who have businesses that they own. And obviously the networking there is a lot, it's much stronger, also in the arts and in business, and we're finding increasingly in politics. So we discussed that with young people, and we're hoping to see our numbers rise over the next couple of years as we take the gay power trip.
Why do you call it the gay power trip? Is it because it's about recruiting gay people?
No, it's about recruiting young people to become gay.
All right, but about recruiting young people to become gay in order for there to be a political gay power base, or for what?
Yes, the political power base is very important, absolutely. But I think in any walk of life, to have the numbers of gay people that we want will be very, very important in influencing all kinds of policy. Politics is just one area, but when you talk about neighborhood, when you talk about real estate, when you talk about business, when you talk about banking, finance, where we have a preponderance of gay people, we have a preponderance of people who are more open politically as well as socially and economically. I think that benefits everyone, Phil.
Well, I was going to tell you or ask you this question. You know, you're talking about recruiting kids to become homosexuals. Where does this leave straight society? You know, if you recruit enough people to become homosexuals, where does this leave straight society?
Well, we're never going to be, I don't think we're in danger of ever losing our numbers of heterosexuals. That means we're not going to be in danger of losing those people who wish to have children, because obviously a heterosexual relationship is the primary way that children are born, but that's not the only way. So we're not in danger of losing heterosexuals, if that's what you're talking about. I think more to the point is we will simply say to a classroom of kids, well, is there anyone here interested in becoming a homosexual? Raise your hand. beforehand.
And I want to ask you about this whole recruiting thing, because it is my opinion, as it is the opinion of many, that this is an orientation from birth, you know.
Well, you can look at it that way. You can look certainly at a great many homosexual people.
In other words, when you don't tell me, you know, I don't expect that you would say to me, you knew you were gay from the time you were born. But when did you know you were gay?
I knew I was gay, I guess, when I first saw the first openly homosexual politician that I ever saw, and that was Harvey Milk. And I decided then that I wanted to be a homosexual like him, because he had such a wonderful speaking voice. He had such power and magnetism. He moved his community so well. He was a man of great sensitivity for all people. I really thought Harvey Milk could have made, and I'm not being facetious, I think he would have made a great president. I think that's the kind of man he was. So I knew when I saw for the very first time Harvey Milk, I went to San Francisco. I grew up, Phil, not too far from San Francisco. I grew up in Palo Alto, but I went there. I met some homosexuals, and I said, let's do this. Where do I go? How do I sign up, if you want?
To sign up? To go someplace?
Well, there's no recruiting office, Phil. The closest thing to that, no, what we're talking about...
Well, that's the kind of the way you're making it sound.
No, what we're talking about is this. We are traveling the country. There's no doubt that many homosexuals are born that way, but there are certainly perks of the gay lifestyle that intrigue children who don't know whether or not they are gay, and that can help them over to our side. So we're trying to reach what we call the undecided, I guess, in politics. The undecided young person. Am I homosexual? Am I not? And if we can recruit enough of them and we get enough people into the homosexual lifestyle, now we have real political power. And that's all we're talking about. We're not looking to subvert the heterosexual community so much as we're looking to go out, talk, shake hands with people, show them some of the printed literature that we have on the benefits of becoming a homosexual.
All right, on the line with me is Ray Berger from the Gay Power Trip Bus Tour, going across the country and watching with middle school students last night's episode of Glee, which shows Kurt eventually becoming romantically entwined with an individual that was a gay basher, a gay bully, or rather a guy that bullied gay students. It's a very interesting take by the writers of that show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. As Mr. Berger and others have said, that they are openly going across the country and recruiting young people for the homosexual lifestyle so that they can get the political numbers back up. 877-876-PHIL. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Was that good, or should I do it again?
Phil Hendry.
On the line, we're here on the Phil Hendry Show, we have Ray Berger from the Gay Power Trip Bus Tour. It's a bus tour across the country of gay activists, gay men and women who are looking to, quote, recruit young people for the gay lifestyle to up the political power of gay people as well as the economic numbers and enhance the gay community in this country by way of enhancing the numbers. Now, you know, Ray, You are going into these schools, into these classrooms, and tell me what you're doing, and then we're going to get to some phone calls here, 877-876-PHIL. But how does this presentation start?
Thank you, Phil. It's a very positive, it's a extremely proactive through the cooperation of the school. We show the episode of Glee. We may show the episode where the two young girls were romantically entwined, or we'll show this one last evening, featuring Kurt and Karofsky. Then we'll sit down and we'll talk. We present a slideshow. We show the gay communities around the country, which are generally very economically enhanced communities, upscale communities. We show the typical real estate owned by gay people. It is generally a high-end type of purchase. We talk about great gay people in history. Obviously, Alexander the Great was one. The great master spy from Great Britain, Alan Turing, the musician Elton John, the American poet Walt Whitman. Then we get down to the what I like to call the brass tacks. What are the advantages of being a homosexual? Well, first of all, being a member of a very tight and politically astute and economically enhanced community. And the advantages of being a homosexual are also that you are with a group of people that protect themselves and protect each other. And it's an alternative kind of sex, which is not the, you know, I hate to make the joke, but the old one where you say, well, it's not your dad's Oldsmobile. Well, this is not your dad's sex. It's not your dad's lifestyle. And so when we put that package together, and we, and obviously, Phil, we're improving it with each town that we visit, we feel we've got what we think is a presentation that's going to attract a lot of young people.
All right. You know, when are you talking about sex, though? You're talking about middle school kids?
Not sex. Graphically, I'm saying that there is an alternative intimacy that is not just the same old, and all you sometimes say to the boys, take a look at your mother. Do you really want to, you know, kiss that, you know? And they're young boys, so they understand.
All right, 877-876, Phil here with Ray Berger from the Gay Power Trip Bus Tour. Here is Rebecca on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Yes.
I'm good, thank you.
This is Joe. Joe, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead.
Yes, I don't think that this man should be allowed in middle schools. Children are confused enough at that age. I have a 14-year-old son. And if this person came to my child's school trying to promote a lifestyle that will, you know, have them ridiculed, beat up, and cause their life to be harder, I would sue the school board, and I would take great issue with this individual. I think it's sick.
Well, we're not trying to get the child beat up. That would be the last thing we want to do, and we certainly don't want to have anyone put at risk. What we're trying to do is enhance the life of that young person by saying there are alternatives, and if you look at the success economically and professionally, even militarily now, as you know, the debate is ongoing, and we will have gay professional soldiers at some time. Gay people enhance every walk of life that they're involved in, and to the betterment of our country. So when we go in and we recruit, we're just comparing. Now, you could say that your son, Joe, I could say, well, look at your father and then look at Alexander the Great. Well, that wouldn't be fair because Alexander the Great is went down in history. But you know what I'm talking about.
Yes. Alexander
wow.
the Great is...
I don't, yeah.
Alexander the Great is remembered for having promoting homosexuality among his troops because it's more you would fight stronger to protect your lover than you would your friend. But you're talking about 10, 11, 12-year-old children. All I would say is if you showed up at my son's school, and I know how confused children are at that age, I would take great issue with you, extreme great issue with you.
All we're doing really is just, right, we're just handing out brochures. We're giving them some of the printed material. And there's a phone number on the back that they can contact if they want more information.
Well, that's a problem. What do you mean a phone number on the back?
Well, certainly we want them contacting the number with their parent. If they have interest in becoming a homosexual, they can call that number, and we're happy to come out and discuss it more.
With the parents?
Well, I don't think Joe wants to be a homosexual, so no, I wouldn't talk it. But yes, with the parent present, yes.
You just
all right,
the
Joe.
Point right now that, you know, this isn't something that people are born with. It's a sickness, and you're out there recruiting children.
Right. I mean, I thought that this is confusing me because I always believed...
Well, there are a lot of people born as homosexuals. Most people are born as homosexuals. But the ones that are on the fence, the ones that are considering an exotic alternative to the humdrum of life...
At the age of 12?
If there are, even at that age, they may already be bored to death with what they're looking at around them. And we want to give them that alternative.
Okay, Joe, thank you for your call. 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Kyle in Topeka, Kansas. Go ahead, Kyle. Oh, we got a break? All right. Tell you what, Kyle, why don't you hang on, buddy? We'll be with you in just a second. We're talking here with Ray Berger from the Gay Pride Power Gay Power Trip bus tour. And essentially what we're talking about here is this idea that you're going from middle school to middle school recruiting. You're using this Glee episode. Does Glee know this?
With the producers?
Yeah, do the producers of Glee?
No, I don't think they do, but I don't think they would have a problem with us using that episode to recruit young homosexuals that we feel are recruit young people into the homosexual movement that we feel would benefit us.
All right, we'll be right back. 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Coming up at the top of the hour, we have Don Mix, a professor of engineering from the University of Washington, on cheating, school cheating, cheating on tests, and a tale to tell he has. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Welcome back to the program here as we talk to Ray Berger from the Gay Power Trip bus tour across the country, openly recruiting for a homosexual lifestyle. And before we go to some phone calls here, Ray, you know, I want to make sure this has nothing to do with sex, okay?
Well, Phil, I have to tell you, I'm glad you said that, because I don't want anyone to think that this is about sex. This is about the lifestyle. This is about making sure that at some point we have refreshed our numbers. No, it is not about sex. And again, there are a large number of homosexuals that are born that way. But for those that are not, for those that are looking for a different kind of life, maybe making a choice that would enhance their life, we hope to provide for them. And kids that are in need of school to be open to this, so we will give them the brochure, the printed material, perhaps a phone number to call, a couple of seminars to attend, the advantages, the disadvantages. We've got some wonderful testimonials. And
when you say you got testimonials, what does that mean? You mean that?
I mean that we have people who became homosexuals as a result of seeing our presentation and are raving about it. And
you mean middle schoolers?
Well, they're adults now.
Well, how long have you been doing this?
Well, off and on, I've been doing this under different names. At different programs, about 10 years.
So, 10 years, and now you have people that became homosexuals as the result of your presentation and are giving testimonials. All right.
Well, the tone of your voice is one that I've heard before, and I want to say this again. This is not about NAMBLA or some sick bunch of freaks.
No, I understand, but I concur with the gentleman. At least I have always believed that it is from birth, it is an orientation, it has nothing to do with being recruited.
No, absolutely, it is from birth, but there's probably, I don't want to put a number on it, maybe 50%.
50?
50% of all homosexuals were recruited actively by a recruitment program that sent them through four or five phases of training before eventually turning them out into the gay community.
877-876-PHIL is the number. And this gentleman who I was going to get to last hour, and I apologize. Kyle, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show. Kyle in Topeka.
Yeah, I agree with Phil. I think that when you use words like recruitment, you suggest that becoming a homosexual is a choice. And that flies in the face
of
the gay orthodoxy as we're taught. So I'm wondering, are you suggesting that homosexuality is a choice, right?
I'm saying that for about 50% of us it is, yeah. And that's why I'm saying that for any walk of life, for any age, even for yourself, you know, you can say, I've had it, I want to try something else. See?
All right, so anyone can choose to be gay.
That is correct. Is that why you called, Sal?
So do you find yourself at odds with people like Rachel Maddow who come out against these quote-unquote pray the gay away programs?
I don't know.
That say from the very beginning from the very beginning of your day.
Let me cut to the chase here. Are you interested in the program? What I was asking, and because Rachel Maddow in the overall, are you interested in the program?
Well, I guess he can't hear me.
Can you hear the caller?
You know, you use words like recruitment.
Kyle,
you're hurting your cause.
I don't think you can.
Personally, I asked you a question. Are you interested in me recruiting you into the homosexual lifestyle? Yes or no?
Don't yell at him, all right?
No, sir.
I don't want anybody yelling. Not you, Kyle. I don't want anybody yelling, all right?
No, I just, if I were a homosexual,
what?
I think that the, really, sir, please. If you were a homosexual, the first story I could tell is that someone else convinced me to be homosexual. And I think that flies in the face of the gay orthodoxy.
Why? When we look at the economic achievement of gay people, we look at the communities we've enhanced, we look at the how we've enhanced every walk of life that we enter, why would that be a bad thing to be recruited into a community of people that do such good? So that's why I'm asking you, and I won't yell, and I apologize for yelling, do you want to be queer or don't you?
Well, I don't think anyone is defined by their sexuality. My sexuality doesn't make me who I am. Don't you just want to let people be individuals?
Maybe.
Maybe it doesn't.
I don't know. But we need to have people, and we need them. And you know what? I wouldn't accept you because you would drive me nuts with your question.
All right. Anyway, Kyle, thank you very much. 877-876-PHIL. You lost your temper there. Why?
There is a certain kind of closeted homosexual that attempts to confuse with his questions and with his trivialities the actual reality of his own sexual need. In that band there, obviously, way deep in the closet. Wait, when I say deep in the closet, I mean he's behind the old, your grandmother's fur coat. And it angers me. I wish they'd be more honest. I wish they would come forward and just say, I'm gay, and, you know, show me the paper, I'll sign it, whatever I have to sign, and whoever I have to give blood to.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, the gay power trip bus tour across the country. Here's Lisa on the Phil Henry Show. Lisa, go ahead.
Hi, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. I called in, I just tuned in to the station and heard the conversation. And I'm just a little bit confused at a couple of the points that are trying to be made. One of the points was that the homosexual community is kind of set aside as, you know, it's powerful and it's embracing and they take care of their own. And now, I'm Native American, and I have a tight community. But I'm not going to go and recruit other people to be Native American. You know, that is something that I'm born with, is my Native blood.
There's one other thing. Who, and I say this with the greatest of respect, but who would want to be a Native American, given how Native American people have been treated, given the their relative advancement in society? Where gay people have moved up the ladder pretty fast.
Well, who would want to be a Native American?
We've got a lot to sell,
and we have so many people trying to get on our tribal roles illegally.
Right.
Many people would love to be Native Americans. They think that we get a lot
because,
of benefits, but, you know,
yeah.
it's merely pennies in comparison to what, you know, the...
Exactly. Well, that's what I'm saying. Right. So if I wanted to be a Native American, do I want to live on a reservation with the alcohol problems? I don't know.
You're stereotyping.
Isn't it true, though? Can I ask you a question? Why do they call it fire water, don't they? Why do they...
Firewater? What are you talking about now? No, what are you talking about now?
I
live on Native land, and
right.
I don't live on a reservation. The majority of the people that live
on my road
do not drink. The majority of them. So that is stereotypical. And I think that's tragic. You know,
it is tragic. I saw something on television. And they said the Native... I saw this thing on television, Lisa, this is Ray. I saw this thing on television. They said the Native American had traded in his teepee for a housing project. And I thought, how is that... that's what they said on television, that the Native American had traded in the teepee for a housing project. And I thought, how is that selling the positive advantages of being a Native American? It isn't. So in order to recruit, you have to have something that is positive. I would say, for instance, what's positive is that how colorful you are and all of that. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Wait a minute, exactly. We're not talking about recruiting for Native Americans here, though.
No, but I thought that was what she was saying.
No, we're not. You brought that up. We're asking, and Lisa made the point, they're not out trying to recruit Native Americans. You're out trying to recruit gay people.
Because you can't decide to suddenly have darker skin, and forgive me, Lisa, but I'm just using, you can't suddenly one morning wake up and go, and everyone's going to say, oh, God, you know, pull the wagons in a circle. Because, for instance,
exactly.
You, Mr. Andrew,
that was
exactly, you know.
Point. If you can't wake up
right.
One morning and decide that you have Native blood, you know, and
right.
I believe that there's been many studies that have been done that people who are homosexual are born with it. And what
that,
I'm
right,
gathering,
right, exactly.
And you can
well,
correct me if I'm wrong, because
thing.
I did just just tune in, but
sure.
what you're saying is that you're going to middle school and offering, correct me if I'm wrong,
yeah. homosexual membership,
an alternate
yeah.
life.
Exactly.
I didn't interrupt you, so can I talk?
No, I'm just saying, we're off. Well, I'm just helping you. I'm saying we're offering homosexual membership in the homosexual, the homosexual community.
This isn't the Boys and Girl Scouts. You know, you're talking to children.
Being a Native American.
And the thing
I'm not trying to tell you how to be an Indian. Please don't tell me how to be queer, you know.
I'm not trying to tell you.
Let's not use Indian, all right? First of all, I got to clear this. Well, the two basic differences here is that Lisa's saying you're not born, you are born Native. Aren't you born gay?
Yes.
Then how can you recruit people into becoming gay?
All right. Did you ever see the movie Hombre where Paul Newman was white? But he was taken in by the Native people. Here's a better one. Dances with Wolves.
Oh, get out of here with Dances with Wolves. We don't even know that that's true. So what you're saying is it's honorary.
What is?
If you recruit a gay person, if you recruit somebody and they become a homosexual, it's honorary homosexuality. Isn't that it? Like a doctorate?
I wouldn't call it honorary. I would say it's certainly not honorary after the first you-know-what. So, and that doesn't happen until you're an adult. I don't know what, I would think I would be a Native American if I had a bow and an arrow and I put the arrow through a guy in a cavalry uniform. I would think I'd be a Native American, but that doesn't happen anymore. There are no guys
there
in cavalry
over,
uniforms, and there are no guys.
There are over 500 Indian nations in the United States, and I have not once, and even growing up, going to visit my family in Canada, where there's all kinds of other reservations, I have not once seen anybody with a bow and arrow and putting it through
exactly.
another man.
Exactly. Putting it through a guy in a cavalry uniform.
The thing is,
in America, at least, the Native Americans sleep in teepees, but in Canada, they sleep in the trunk of a police car. So that's something to keep in mind.
All right, look, Lisa, very, very, very good points. And I think that Lisa brought up, thank you for your call, I think she brought up essentially what it is we're trying to say here. Is it an orientation from birth, or can you choose?
Mr. Henry, I think I've answered that question a million different ways.
You said that, it's an orientation from birth, but you can also choose.
You can become gay the same way a white man can become a Native American if he, like, what was the show?
Oh, will you knock it off with the shows, okay?
Are you trying to tell me that Kevin Costner wasn't officially an Indian at the end of that thing when he went off with the woman?
No, he wasn't. He wasn't even close. He was a Hollywood. He was a white man playing some jackass, and then the movie ended.
He was a white man playing a jackass, and the movie ended. What tribe is that?
Yeah. Okay. We'll be right back. I'm not going to get into a discussion here of how a white guy can become an honorary Indian. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. On the line with me, Ray Berger from the Gay Power Trip Bus Tour, recruiting young people to become homosexuals. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL. On the line with me is Ray Berger from the Gay Pride Power, or the Gay, Gay sorry.
It's the Gay Power Trip bus tour. I understand how confusing, but we like the idea of Gay Power Trip because it is about political power, Phil, and it is a trip. But it's not an ego trip. It is a trip of pride to enhance the numbers of the gay community.
All right. Now, on the brochure that you hand out when you are recruiting for the homosexual community...
You say that word, recruiting, like you think I'm a joke.
No, well, I've heard you talking to the lady who was the Native American talking about honorary homosexuals and things like that. When you pass out this brochure, I noticed there are memberships.
That is correct.
Okay, so I'm a homosexual for what, 2 years?
This is a membership in the homosexual community. You are a homosexual for 2 years, and what that 2 years gets you is a part ownership in a townhome. You have a financial sector job with Dun & Bradstreet. Membership in an athletic club. You also are well known at local grocery stores and so on, and bistros and coffee shops. Your coffee is ready made for you when you go down the street to your coffee bistro. This is a gay community badge. That's all it is.
And are you selling these?
We're not selling them, no. We are offering them as an enhancement to the lifestyle. That's all.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Phil Henry Show here with Marta in Providence, Rhode Island, listening on WSAR. Marta, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Thank you. Ray, I just wanted to ask you.
Hello?
You say that, Ray, you say that you chose this.
Hello?
That you decided to, can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes.
Okay. That you decided that, you know, you've tried it the other way. You want to try this now. Want it like it's just a new kind of wine or something. You want to try this. You want to try being gay. Did you date women when you were younger?
Did I date
Were you
women?
Ever heterosexual? Were you ever a heterosexual?
Was I ever a heterosexual? Are we ever heterosexual? Have you ever been heterosexual? I'm sure that you've behaved as a heterosexual, but have you ever really been? And that is a question. It's a very good question, and it's one I think a lot of us ask. And we look for the answer.
Oh, come on. The question's straightforward.
What do you mean the question is straightforward?
Have you ever been attracted to women? Did you want to marry one? Did you want to settle down with one?
Of course I've been attracted to women my entire life. I love women. I love them not the way I love men,
okay,
but I absolutely adore women. I adore women. And I've had sex with women. I've danced with women. What do you want me to tell you? I've lived with women. But my choice ultimately was this, to become a homosexual and to have the kind of suave faire, I think you would agree, that comes with that, you see. So that's what we're doing. And when we go to a young person and we say, would you like to be a homosexual, here's what it's all about, we're hopefully putting our best foot forward.
All right, go ahead, Marta.
I'm just saying, don't you think that you had that tendency already, and maybe when you met Harvey Milk, you were so impressed because he was a wonderful person and charismatic, and he did a lot of wonderful things. Maybe you just felt some connection there. I don't know why you couldn't admire him if he was a heterosexual.
No, I wasn't sexually attracted to him. No, it didn't. I thought he was a great man. And I realized that what he was doing
had
great power.
Why do you have to be gay to emulate him?
Well,
why do you have to be gay to emulate
Harvey
him?
Harvey Milk never would have been popular were he not gay. I would be a gay man. Well, his agenda was a lot of things. Harvey's agenda was a lot of things. It was about civil rights. It was about, cleaning up dog crap, and a lot of things. And so I don't know why you're asking me these questions.
Are you interested in
becoming a homosexual? If you're interested, I want to send you.
No, I'm not.
Everybody that's calling up, you want to recruit them.
Well, I need to get that out of the way. I need to say, Marta, come join us.
All right, go ahead.
Wow. These children that
you're
recruiting.
Well, the kids that we do, I simply say to the kids, call the number on the back of the brochure and we'll talk.
I don't want to be gay. Please, I'm fine.
I'm not asking you to be gay.
these children that you're recruiting, isn't it possible that they already have that tendency, and maybe when they see this, it's like a validation?
No.
Or
no, it isn't. No,
you're
I mean, well, this is an argument. This is absolutely an argument about what is sexual orientation and what isn't, and you are not really addressing that, I don't think. Let's go to Laura here. Laura, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead.
Hi. First of all, let me say, I don't want to cause any kind of disrespect, and I think everybody chooses their lifestyle, and that's fine. I have respect for anybody that, you know, follows through and stands up for what they are. That's great. But as far as recruiting, when we're talking middle school students, I have a teenage son who is in middle school who barely is just going through puberty and barely knows anything about sexuality, period. I'm wondering if it would be even illegal to try to recruit children into a community that they're completely unaware of.
No, it's not illegal to recruit someone into an Indian tribe like that one lady wanted to do.
She didn't want to do that.
The whole topic isn't about Native American or African American. Right now,
she wanted me to become black, and I said, I can't. How do I become black?
Phil Henry.
I could be honorary black.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
Just in the past month, six students at Ramapo College.
It certainly appears to be a missile.
Because the lawyer said it was legal. It said it did not fall within the...
I don't want to be the one to have to explain to your parents.
I was a sucker.
You're fired.
Famous Phil Henry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. It's a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch, and where we go through a looking glass of sorts through the membrane of reality. How do you like that? And go places other talk shows can't go, couldn't go, wouldn't know how to go there. Anyway, Professor Don Mixa will be joining us this hour to discuss a cheating scandal, not only in his class, but this kind of thing going on across the country. Plus, still to come, Amazon.com finds itself embroiled in a controversy over a pedophile guidebook, if you can believe this, that's currently selling up a storm. And I have no doubt, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I have no doubt it's selling because there's so much perverse curiosity. But nonetheless, our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, and we're online at philhenryshow.com right now. As a matter of fact, you can take a look at a live streaming video of our show, live streaming audio. You can listen to the show online. You can get downloads of the show the next day. You can get downloads of our Classic Phil podcast. You can listen to thousands and thousands of hours of our archives. We're making all of those hours downloadable eventually. And what else? What other groovy things? You name it, man. So it's all ahead, and I made a little announcement in the pre-show. If you don't have a subscription to our website, then you didn't hear the announcement I made during our pre-show. You did not hear, and it's a very, very teeny-weeny, itsy-bitsy little thing of an announcement, because the bigger one is coming, but it was a piece of good news that I did share with our Backstage Pass members. So, you know, 877-876-PHIL on the line with me from... on the line with me from Seattle, Washington, is Don Mixa. He's a professor of engineering at the University of Washington. In his classroom, they have had, of sorts, a cheating scandal. At the University of Central Florida, they have also had a kind of a cheating scandal. As a matter of fact, Don, and welcome to our program, Don. Good to have you.
Hey, Phil.
University of Central Florida cheating scandal prompts professor to issue ultimatum. Hundreds of students caught in a cheating scandal at the University of Central Florida have been given a choice: come clean or face the consequences. Regardless of their decisions, all the students must retake their midterm this coming week. Professor Richard Quinn addressed his students in a videotaped lecture, explaining that the test scores were a grade and a half higher than they had ever run before. And I guess basically saying to the students, you ain't kidding anybody, least of all me. So let's listen here. I guess there's a little bit of the lecture. Here's Professor Richard Quinn lecturing his students after he found out that so many of them had cheated on this exam.
The days of being able to find a new way to cheat the system are over. They're over. to say I'm disappointed is beyond comprehension. Physically ill, absolutely disgusted, completely disillusioned, trying to figure out what was the last 20 years for.
Professor Quinn says he negotiated a deal with the school's dean on how to remedy the scandal.
I don't want to be the one to have to explain to your parents why you aren't going to graduate. If you participated in this, you have a choice. You can sit back in silence and hope your name doesn't get caught in the net, which is very quickly closing around the participants, or you can individually, quietly, one by one, anonymously if you wish, to the rest of your classmates, identify yourself to your lab instructor. If you do that, get to complete the rest of the course. The grade you get in the course is the grade you earn in the course. And providing you complete a four-hour ethics course being offered by the folks over in academic affairs,
wow,
any permanent record of this will be wiped from your transcripts. So be no further action taken.
Wow. And so finally, here is Constantine Ravin, a UCF student, University of Central Florida student, telling ABC News, this whole thing's a witch hunt.
This is college. Everyone cheats. Everyone cheats in life in general. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find anyone in this testing lab who hasn't cheated on an exam. They're making a witch hunt out of absolutely nothing, as if it were to teach us some kind of moral lesson.
Boy, I don't know where that guy came from, man. I hope he goes back. Anyway, on the line with us here is Don Mixa. Why does that last guy there bother me?
Well, I don't blame you, Phil. The last comment there from that young man shows a decided lack of knowledge of how life works. Because I can tell you that you may cheat, and he may think everybody cheats, but in life, if you come up against that one guy that didn't cheat, that one individual who actually knows the material, knows the topic at hand, knows the profession inside and out more than you do because you cheated, you're going to lose. And we did deal with the very same thing in our classroom, so it was very unfortunate.
And how many students were caught in your class?
We had, in my class, which is an engineering course, and then we also do architectural drafting, two courses really rolled into one. We had some 15 students.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not. And I'd like to believe that these students, in fact, I do believe that these students are attempting to do their best, and they got some bad luck. The young man that had brought it to my attention, a kid by the name of Terry Caldwell, was, I think, a little bit arrogant about it, and that is not serving him well. I did say to him, in as I guess in as happy a way as I could, as well, thank you, but it wasn't really his place. And
Wait. So these students were turned in by a fellow student?
Yeah, initially they were turned in by this Caldwell, and when he did, he gave me a little bit of a lecture, which I thought was presumptuous of this young man. I mean, I am the teacher of the class, and I understand that cheating is bad. I don't really need a young person to tell me what to do or how to do it, and that's what he was doing. And so it was hard for me to... I couldn't develop the kind of indignation that this other professor had developed, this Professor Quinn there at University of Central Florida. I couldn't get that kind of indignation going because Professor Quinn was lucky in that he was able to tell whoever it was that found this out, look, let me take the lead, and that is what's happening. He's taking the lead on this. And
well, how do you know he doesn't deserve the lead? You know,
I don't know how to tell you this, Phil, but maybe he did. Maybe he deserves the lead. But I was not given the option that he gets. So if he doesn't deserve the lead, someone gave him the option to take the lead. Someone said, I found out students were cheating in your class, but I'll let you be the hero, you know. And so in enabling him to be the hero, he gets to stand there while I had this guy come into my office and tell me, oh, excuse me, Professor Mixa, there are students that are cheating, and I want you to know that, and I want you to do something about it. And I said, I want to do something about it, but now I'm angry. And I'm angry because some, you know, what else do you want to call it, some punk kid comes into my office and starts telling me how to do my business. So that's what bothered me more than anything else, Phil.
The point is to catch the cheaters. I don't understand what you mean by this punk kid, so on and so forth, coming into your office.
Well, first of all, they were cheating, and they shouldn't cheat. I should be the one that's going to find out about them cheating, and I should be the one that reports this, not a tattletale. And in order for this tattletale to come into my classroom and tell me these things, I had to suspend this kid. And
why?
I suspended him because he was coming in and spilling his guts and not allowing me to say, all right, I'll take it from here.
And all right, I want to be clear about something. We're talking to Don Mixer, number 877-876-PHIL.
I'm not against Phil. I don't want it to appear like I believe in cheating.
All right, well, you don't believe in cheating, but you had some students cheating in your class. A student came forward and told you, and you feel shown up by that?
I don't feel shown up by that. I feel as if I should have taken the lead. He should have let me. He should have said, Professor Mixer, here are some students that are cheating. Now you go ahead and take it from here. I know a lot of these young people. I know a lot of these people because I have coffee with them at the Starbucks over here in the square. I hold forth at a lot of our Starbucks meetings. I go from table to table and I talk. But these are my people. These are my people. And for some kid that is taking this class for the first time to walk in and say to me, here is a bunch of these students that are cheating, and I don't get the opportunity to at least give them a chance to
get away with it?
Well, I don't want to say get away with it, no, but at least give them the chance to, yeah, to cover it up. I had to suspend this young man, and he's not going to graduate.
All right, I want to ask a question here. Why would you suspend somebody for pointing out to you that students are cheating in your class? Why would you suspend that man and not commend that man? Now, I heard what you said about they're your people, and
they are students that have been with me for a long time. They're good students. They're good people. We do share a great deal politically. We have similar points of view. We have a similar political outlook. We have a similar worldview. We have coffee together. We oftentimes dine together. And I don't know this tattletale and this rat. And I say rat, and I shouldn't say rat, because I believe in students, no matter who they are, even if they are... Okay, I'll use the word. Even if they are a cheese-eating, just a two-bit rat can't keep its mouth shut. Because I can tell you, Phil, this happened to me when I was a student. And when I was attempting to get my doctorate in, someone had said, hey, Don Mixer, this, that, and ratted me out, and I had to take the course again. I will tell you that these students share my political views, but this kid that ratted them out, I saw him putting up George Bush flyers. Okay? You see where I'm going with this, Phil?
I understand that. So the kid doesn't have your politics. He ratted out some students that you like, said that they were cheating, didn't give you the chance to take the lead on saying, I have students that are cheating, and didn't give you the chance to cover up their cheating. And so the person that's getting punished is the student that told you they were cheating. And what are you doing about the students that were cheating?
What I am doing about the students that were cheating is I am going to sit down and have a very firm conversation with each one of them. And I can assure you that I will have that conversation with them. And I can also assure you that when we get done having that conversation, they will know, okay, that I am very unhappy with them. But for this kid to come into my office and say, these students are cheating, what are you going to do about it? And I look at him and I say, who are you? And he turns around and rats them out to the administration. People that I've known for years, people that I've had coffee with. I had no choice but to flunk this guy, suspend him from the class.
Well, you know what? You're going to get a challenge from him.
How?
You're giving him an incomplete?
His test was terrible. He said other people were cheating. Maybe he should have, because his test was in the toilet.
It really was.
Absolutely. And I showed it to him, and he looked back at me, and he looked at his test, and he had that perspiration on his face, that thin film of sweat that some of these students get when they realize that for all of their high and mighty and heavy-handedness, they're all alone on this one. They're twisting in the wind on this one. And I said, how do you feel now, huh? You feel good? You feel good about ratting out 15 good quality people while you're out putting your Bush posters up? And he's like this, Phil. You would have loved it. He's like this. I mean, I said, would you go outside when you do that? So I found him to be a disgrace. And
all right, I want to ask you a question on how do you morally justify failing this student because he said there are students cheating? How do you morally justify failing that student for bringing up to you the fact there were other students cheating?
I morally justify it because it's my job to find out about these kids that are cheating, not his job. I morally justify it because these are students that I have a great deal of admiration for. And this guy, I wouldn't know him from an alcoholic that I step over in the street. I morally justify it because these students have been friends of mine since they came to the University of Washington. And this guy, to be perfectly honest with you, if I saw him walking within 100 feet of my wife and daughter, I'd drop him with a gunshot because I would assume he's going to walk up to them and feel them up. Now, I'm sorry.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry to put it that way.
All right, Don Mixon with us on a cheating scandal, not only at the University of Central Florida, but at the University of Washington. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Just exactly how important is it to report cheaters? How important is it? And how important is it to cover up cheaters? And what exactly is Don Mixon getting out of this? Anyway, 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. As we talk here with Don Mixa from the University of Washington, we're talking about students cheating. You had a cheating scandal, just the same way they did at University of Central Florida, involving 15 students. You had a student come to you and say that there are students cheating, and you've punished that student.
Phil, hold on for a minute. You know, I was listening to you during this break as you were going on and on. Railing and ranting and getting and losing your breath talking to your staff. And
no, whoa, hold on. Whatever I was doing with my staff is what I was doing with my staff. I'm asking you, how do you justify flunking a student that was doing the right thing, telling you that students were cheating?
Cheating happens in life. You heard what that young man said. Cheating happens. Everyone cheats. And
that kid that I heard on that audio clip is as stupid as he's probably going to sound in 20 years when he's getting his ass canned from his fifth or sixth job. Cheating happens in life, so we ought to just go ahead and cheat on exam. Why even take exams?
To find out how much a student knows, that's why.
And well, how are you going to find out how much a student knows if he's cheating?
I know if he is cheating. I know he's cheating. And I know that he's cheating, but I also know that there are some students that are cheating more than others. The ones that cheat the less are the ones that know the most. That's how I know, and you get excited because I'm bringing up a larger point. I'm bringing up a point of trust. I'm bringing up a point of loyalty, and these students that I've had coffee with over the years down at the Starbucks, which is down here.
I understand about your coffee with your students. I know that, Don.
Well, if you understand about the coffee with my students and the fact that these are young people that I have known and admired for 4 years, and these are my people, this is my tribe. Nobody walks into the middle of my tribe and starts talking to me about how things are going to go, how we're going to run things from here on out. And first thing I'm going to do is I'm telling you, Mixa, that these ones are cheating, and you better hop to it, boy. Boy, I tell you, I haven't been a professor for 30-some years to have some punk.
Well, you can call him a punk all you want, but he did the right thing and said that there were students cheating, and you have failed this student. He has to take the class again. He will not graduate this year. Is that correct?
I don't know. It's not my problem.
Well, yeah, it is your problem. If you flunk a guy and he's not going to graduate, you're not aware of that.
Let me explain something to you, Mr. Andrew. It's not my job to figure out what year everybody is going to be. He'll take the class again, and he'll take the test again. And I'll tell you something else. If I find out that he's cheating, oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Well, you sound very vindictive. And
no, it's not being vindictive. It's being loyal.
You sound vindictive and you sound vengeful. 877-876-PHIL. Viola in Nashville, Tennessee. Go ahead, Viola. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yes, I sat there and listened to him talk. His first problem was making friends and having coffee with these students. I went to college for a short time. You don't do that with your instructors. And if he's going to pass all these students that cheated, and he failed the one because he was, as some people use the term, snitch, he's got a lawsuit just waiting to happen. And then, on top of making that threat, you made that threat. Wait a minute. You made that threat about killing him. You made that threat. If he come within so many feet of your family, you would shoot him dead. Well, that's another thing he can use against you, because that is a threat on the radio. I would love to get in touch with this guy and tell him exactly what you said.
So you come from the same kind of species that he's come. He comes from the rat. Is that it?
You call them your tribe. Are you a cult leader? Is that what you are?
No, excuse me. I didn't say that guy's not in my tribe. My tribe are my students and the ones that I have coffee with at Starbucks.
All right,
the ones
he's
I go
your
table to table
too.
With.
He's not a punk.
I think he's more your student because you're teaching the finer points of being a rat. And
let's not start calling people rat, okay?
I don't want to call anybody a rat. But
all right, hold Viola, hold the line. We'll be right back with you. I got to take a break, okay? 877-876-PHIL. We're talking here with Don Mixa from the University of Washington on, talking to Don Mixa about a whole lot of things, man, and this cheating scandal at the University of Central Florida and the cheating scandal at UCF.
Phil Hendry. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. Welcome back here online, too, at philhendryshow.com as we present live streaming video and audio of our show every night. And with me is Don Mixa from the University of Washington. I'm going to return to Viola, who is a caller of ours in Nashville. But I simply want to say, Don, that when you fire, when you flunked that young man who turned in those cheaters, your reason for this was that you will not be shown up by some punk who's putting George Bush flyers up.
That is correct, yes. And I stand by that. And I'll tell you why, Phil.
That seems very frivolous.
I will tell you why, because I've known these students. We are not, I'm not just their professor, I am their tribal leader. And
see, I don't know what you mean by tribal leader.
Maybe you don't know the modern lexicon, but that just simply means that we are friends, and he broke in to our tribal council, if you will, and started to say how we were going to attack the cavalry and what warriors would go and who would stay back and manhandle the squaws. Well, that's not going to happen. Not on my watch.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let me get Viola back up on the line. And Viola, go ahead. You're back on the air here on the Phil Hendry Show with Don Mixa.
Okay, thank you. This man has literally got a screw loose. Teachers are taught to listen to their students. A student comes in and tells you that you've got classmates cheating. Well, he should listen. He's not above any other teacher in the system. You should listen to your students. And like I said before, he should not have been failed. He came to you, was being honest with you, and you probably took him down two or three steps, and he's not a punk. These other people that you, the students that you're, is your tribe, as you call it, in other words, you didn't care that they were cheating. You was going to pass them anyway, it sounds like to me.
No, ma'am. I was going to look at each one of them in the eye and say, if you cheated, you have violated our tribal council, is all I'm saying. Now,
and how many people could look at you and say, I didn't cheat, and you would believe them because they're your tribal? All right, that's wrong.
I didn't say they were tribal. I said that they're part of my tribe. But let me ask you this, ma'am.
But you also said it's the tribal council.
The student that, well, you say that as if you're mocking it. Are you laughing at the fact that I have such a good relationship with my students, that I go table to table at Starbucks, that I answer their questions, that I, yes, at times, and I'm not saying always, but at times I have comforted them.
So you're telling me just because this guy was seen putting up Bush pictures or whatever,
putting up Bush.
Could not accept him as one of your tribals. You couldn't accept him and have the same courtesy for him like you did the rest of them. That's wrong. You treat your class the same.
I will tell you this. He is a Tea Partier, but you also made a comment that is true. He's out and he is putting up pictures of Bush.
Freedom of speech, sir.
Pictures of... Do you know what I mean by Bush?
You're a teacher. You know that.
Do you know what I mean?
You've been through all that.
It is freedom of speech, isn't it?
No, it's not freedom. It's not freedom of speech if he's putting up pictures of women with their legs spread.
That ain't what you told us.
That's exactly what I said, and this woman here thinks it's okay to have pictures of underage girls with their legs spread. Thank you.
No, that's not what you said.
You never said that. You said it was Tea Party, and...
I said, this creep, yes, he was putting up flyers about George Bush's book and girls with their legs spread.
No,
you didn't say that, man.
Did I not say Bush? Didn't I say that?
You said President Bush. President Bush.
Yeah, and you, and ma'am, you
that
know so much about school, and
me.
You know, you, well, all of a sudden you don't know things. A minute ago, you were telling me all about the things you know, and now you don't know that when I say the guy's hanging up pictures of Bush, you don't think I mean early morning dew.
I listened to what you said, and now you've offended me.
God.
You have offended me. You are the sorriest excuse for an instructor I have ever seen.
This woman is lying. I said that the Tea Party movement put this kid in my class so I'd rat out. And Viola,
you've got a problem. You're one-sided.
No.
They ain't nobody put him in your class. He took that class.
The Tea Party movement put him in.
You can't pick your instructors. I went to college. You cannot pick your instructor. He chose that class.
You, ma'am, if you went to college and you don't know what I mean when I say the guy's hanging pictures of Bush from here to Christmas, baby, do I feel sorry.
Excuse me? I took a test before I even went to college to get into a nursing program, and I had the score of a four-year college graduate. Don't tell me I'm stupid. You sound like the stupid idiot, and I'm sorry about that on the radio.
Ma'am, I cannot believe you said what you just said. You said that you took the class, you took a test, and you had the score of a four-year-old. And she said
she said of a four-year college graduate.
No, you did not. You said of a four-year-old.
What did I say?
No, she didn't, man. Are you hearing? Are you listening?
All I can tell you, Phil, is if this lady Viola has been to college... I'm listening to you, ma'am, and I'm listening to you lie. I'm listening to your double standard. I'm listening to your hypocrisy. I'm listening to your four-year-old.
As a four-year-old, you go and take it. You listen to me, and I'll say it again, but you're not listening. I said before I went to college, I took a test to get into licensed practical nursing program. I scored the highest score of a four-year college graduate. I did not say nothing about a four-year-old.
Can I point something out? Let me point this out.
You need to take the earplugs out of
your ears. You said you took the test. No, ma'am, you took the test before you ever went to college and said you got the highest score of a four-year college graduate. Now, that's a lie.
And why is that a lie?
She said she hadn't been to college, and then she said she had a four-year degree. You see, this is what the Tea Party does.
Will you knock it out with a Tea Party?
Yes, you did. You said you had a four-year degree, and then you said, but you got the four-year degree before you'd ever been to a...
No, that is not what I said. I told you I went to college. I didn't say I finished college.
You said
and then I said I took the test before I went to college to get into the licensed practical nursing program, and I
had a four-year... Because you went to 4 years of college.
Graduate on that test.
Degree, right. Yeah, you had a four-year degree.
No! She had the test score of someone who would have had...
Score. You need to take your earplugs out. You're not listening to us.
You know what I need to do? You know what I need before I talk to a woman like you? Do you know what I need before I talk to a woman like you? Something that you've got close to where you live, a bottle of that whiskey that you people drink. Because that's the only way that I can make myself clear to you. Well, I should.
talking to you.
I don't drink.
All right.
I don't
Viola,
smoke.
That was very good.
You ought to start.
Thank you.
You ought to start.
Thank you very much, Viola. Very good. And I think that the lady, I don't know what your problem is.
I don't have a problem. Did you hear that? She hasn't graduated from college, and yet I'm...
Take it easy, okay?
So I do not rankle that easily, but when someone comes on here and starts talking to me like she is getting the dust covers from the bed and folding up the nightshirts and is going to take it down to the man who does the laundry and is clapping her hands as if I'm supposed to get into a tub of water while she stands there and stares at me naked while I'm 10. I react.
Wait. What was that about? Did you have a nanny that sounded like that once?
Yes, I did. We had my father hired it.
All right, well, I don't want to get into that. Our number, 877-876-PHIL. Here is Nicole on the Phil Hendry Show in the Tri-Cities in Washington. Go ahead, Nicole.
Well, Mr. Mixer, I have to tell you that I think the problem here is that we need to treat you like a 4-year-old or a 10-year-old. I have 3 children, 12, 8, and 4, and my children, including youngest, has more value in his little pinky than you spend your whole body. He is able to decipher from right and wrong.
Boy.
And apparently, sir, you do not seem to understand that there is right and wrong. And what you have done by flunking this young man for doing the right thing and coming forward and
what
letting
about my tribe?
You... What about your what, sir?
What about my tribe of students that I owe loyalty to?
You mean you're crazy? You're crazy
with
class?
Me.
You mean you're crazy?
It's not a crazy.
Is that what
you, what you call a crazy? But the fact that I'm a teacher, I'm a professor of a class, and I've had these students since their freshman year. And here comes some guy with his Tea Party 3-cornered hat, and his pictures of naked women, and he's posting them all over the school. It's irrelevant. It's irrelevant that he came to me and told me what he was going to do.
Sir.
I should have been the guy. I'm the professor. I'm the one who says,
sir,
who gets fined.
Why
who
were
gets
you unable to figure out who he is?
I'm not going to do it on his timetable. He's a student.
You
I'm the professor. That's number one. You referenced penis in your comments. I'm wondering why.
What?
Pardon me?
She said, in his little penis.
His little pinky. Pinky.
Oh,
I did not hear
goodness.
That. I heard, no,
sir,
I'm sorry. I heard a different
your,
word.
Get your mind
I
out of the gutter. Seriously.
My mind's
out
not
of the gutter.
Gutter. I didn't say it, ma'am. I didn't say it. You did.
No sir,
she said in his little pinky.
Now, as to whether or not that guy deserves to be shot if he's put his hands on my wife, what I said was, I didn't trust the guy. If I saw him within 100 yards of my wife and daughter, yeah, I'd put a slug in him because I would be absolutely confident that he'd go up and try to follow my wife.
Because
okay?
You wronged him? Or
what's wrong with that?
Because you've wronged him? Because you've affected his life? Is that why you're afraid of this man? That he might
are you? Are you... Yeah, that you're saying that this guy is somehow...
What do you mean I've affected his? All he has to do is take the class again. Big deal. It's going to cost him one semester.
Why?
Why? He's learning...
Because you decided to break the rules and make him okay for others to break.
It's called protocol. It's called going up the chain of command. Don't go over my head ever, unless you're female and I'm married to you. And that is an intimate thing. And I don't want to. I'm not.
Will you keep the filth out of this, please?
How long have you been teaching?
You don't go over my head unless it's an intimate act. You're my wife. What's wrong with that?
I don't need to hear that, man. We're not talking about that right now.
What did the lady ask?
How long have you been teaching?
30 years.
Yeah. No, sir. You will never be a teacher of my
parents,
children.
Parents like
you
coming to me.
No.
Yep.
You will
never
teach my children. You want to know why?
How do you know? Maybe they'll take out a student loan and decide to come to my school without your permission. 18 years old, they can do what they want. Didn't think of that, did you?
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. But the difference
what a
between,
child.
Between
what a baby.
I'm a baby?
Yeah, you're acting like a baby.
Well, the ridiculous
part is... I don't like it when a woman laughs at me.
You're kind of laughable. You're a little funny, actually. Honestly, you sound like a joke. I think I've never laughed so hard.
All right, can I ask you something? You know, let me say this. I think your kids and you sound like a joke. Does that hurt? Of course it does.
Of course not.
I put my life. Your kid into my job, and I talk to parents like you every day who think they know the whole program. They got the whole McGilla figured out.
When I say to them,
there's a thing called going up the chain of command, and when that Tea Party and freak came to me and told me what I was going to do while he's putting up pictures of girls with their legs spread wearing his three-cornered hat.
Man, all right, go ahead, Nicole. One more question, then I got to get going.
What do you laugh?
How to be an adult or how to act like a child? Are you not able to say, hey, I would be happy to take care of this problem. I will handle this. You're telling me that you could not at all do your job?
Yes, I didn't say that to him. I said to him, I'll handle it in my own sweet way and in my own sweet time. And I think that's what bothered him and his little timetable. Well, guess what? Now he's got a timetable. It's going to take another semester to graduate. How's that feel for a timetable?
Nicole, thank you. Thank you for your call. I got to take a break. 877-876-PHIL. You sound very vindictive, Don. I don't think I've ever heard you quite this vindictive.
I have had more people that I've talked to tonight who sound exactly like the parents that I've got to deal with. And it does. It puts you into a mindset. It puts you into a mindset of depression and depravity, quite frankly, that you get into when you talk to these parents. Because I can tell you, Phil, they don't make any sense. And I begin to think up these terrible fantasies, these things that I want to do with my wife when I get home. It's got nothing to do with anything, but they force me into it.
And I don't know what you're talking about.
When I said, no one goes over my head unless it's my...
Yeah, I understand that. And you kept on hitting it and kept on hitting it. And I don't want to talk about that, if you don't mind.
Everybody's calling me a liar. Don't you think I should have?
I don't... that's got nothing to do with the subject at hand, though. 877-876-PHIL is our number. We'll be back with more from Don Mixa on the cheating scandal, both in his class at the U of W and at the University of Central Florida on The Phil Hendry Show.
It's The Phil Hendry Show.
Oh, God, oh. I hate her. I hate her guts.
Visit us online at talkradionetwork.com. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the Phil Hendry Show. Our news hour, next hour, with Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman. And on the line with me from the University of Washington, Seattle, is Don Mixa. As we wrap up this hour on the cheating scandals going on, well, the University of Central Florida was quite egregious. And a professor posted online a statement about the disgrace. Don, you seem to think that the community, the tightness that you have with your students, and we'll get to some more phone calls here, somehow trumps or supersedes the need for honesty and integrity in the testing.
No, I do not, Phil. I don't. And if I left that impression, I apologize to you and your listeners. What I do believe is important, if you'll allow me.
Go ahead.
What I do believe is important is the sense of loyalty, yes, the community, and yes, I'll say it again, the tribal continuity of a teacher, a professor with his students. And when someone who is new, who has a political point of view that I think, by and large, many of us in the higher education community considers to be odious, that would be the conservative point of view, comes in and tells me that members of my class, my tribe, are cheating, and that he, the outsider, is going to tell me what I'm supposed to do about that, I resent it. Now, I told him, I said, I tell you what, let me deal with this. And he said to me, and he wagged his finger in my face and said, no, I'm going to tell you. And then he did something that I never forgive. Put his finger in his nose. I never forgive that. And there he is with his finger in his nose as if he is a fifth grader. And I'm trying to make sense to him about what we need to do with the cheating, and he's picking his nose. That tells me he didn't care about me. He didn't care about that school. He didn't care about my family. He didn't care about his family. He didn't care about anybody's family or anyone's life. He didn't care about anything. He just wanted to stand there and look at the look on my face as he was going to tell me what to do with my students while he dug around in his nose. I had to take a stand. I had to make a decision.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's go on to a phone call. Here is Alan in Houston, Texas. Alan, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Don Mixa.
Thanks, Phil, for having me on.
Yes.
Professor Mixer, as a professor, your job is to teach unopinionated, to allow your students to form their own conclusions, and to develop their own thought process. It should not have anything to do with race, religion, or political affiliation. I do have a college degree, but I was taught years ago by one of my professors that in order to be a true professor, you have to be unopinionated so that your students can form their own conclusions. When you refer to your students as your tribe and your people and not students, I can't believe that.
In closing, I
listen to what you have to say, but in closing, I kind of wish I was one of your students, because I feel if I was one of your students, I'd be able to retire, because I'd be able to sue the university that hires you and you yourself. Bill, I'll let you have it, and I'll just listen.
Well, is the gentleman going to hang up, or do you want to?
No.
I want to ask you a question, sir. What am I supposed to do when you talk about my students form their own opinions? Okay. So let them cheat. Let's let them do what they want to do. And I'll even let the guy stand there with his finger up his nose, not giving me any respect, and I'll do it your way. Fix his nose.
The way that you're referring to that student, I don't see how a university could let you talk like that about one of your students. Your job is to teach. If I send my kids to a university, I want them to be educated and not indoctrinated. And I feel sorry for your tribe, and I feel sorry for your people. I feel that they're getting shortchanged on a true education, and that they won't develop their own thought process.
Have I said any political point of view? I didn't say any political point of view. I didn't say any political point of view.
Well, you were mocking the Tea Party.
Okay, I did that. But all I said was my tribe and my people. And I said, this Tea Party guy. But I didn't like this guy because he was picky. He had the John Adams hat. But he's putting up pictures of women with no pants on.
There's
no, he wasn't. You said it was a picture. No, he said it was a poster about George Bush, and now you're trying to make it sound like it's porn. Thank you very much, Alan. World famous Phil Hendry Show. We'll be back next hour with our news hour. Thank you, Professor Mixa, very much.
That's
Phil
a lot, too.
Hendry.
You're glad I'm going off the air.
From the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
I don't want to be the one to have to explain to your parents
because the lawyer said it was legal. He said it did not fall within the
Genesis 8, verse 21.
We're getting calls daily about people's experiences.
That is a threat on the radio.
World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, and like they say,
that is a threat on the radio.
Every night we take you through the looking glass, baby, and beyond, places where their talk shows wish they could go, but they can't. Amazon.com takes heat for a pedophile guide. What in the hell? That's right. The Pentagon also is pretty certain about the mystery missile near Southern California. They think they've figured out what the hell that was. Plus, Democrats urge Pelosi not to run for leadership. They have said, and I'm quoting, that she is a toxic, toxic political presence. 877-876-PHIL. And by the way, you heard a little bit of the audio there of President Bush saying that he was told by the attorneys that it was legal, so you can't really prosecute the man for a war crime, Amnesty International. And I don't want to make a big thing out of this. I just don't know what the purpose of an organization is. And I'm so sorry that I went to that concert back in 1988 to benefit Amnesty International because they wanted to. What were you people doing?
That was in there. It was about torturing people and everything.
How do you know, man? Were you even born?
Yeah, not really.
I went to some concert for Amnesty International at the Coliseum back in 1988-89. You know that one, Robert?
No, I don't know that. I don't know. Unless it was Wattstax, I don't know it.
Wattstax? Anyway, which, by the way, that's the funniest movie I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, man, I think Woodstock pretty funny, too.
No, Woodstock's funny. I'll give you that. But Wattstacks, holy God, man.
What's wrong with Wattstacks?
I didn't say anything was wrong with it, but some of those afros.
Yeah, you look at the afros on the people in the Wattstacks movie. You don't even see that movie, man.
You haven't seen that movie. What are you talking about?
I can pretty much imagine, though.
I ain't kidding you, man. I saw one group at that in that Wattstacks movie. This cat had a freaking basketball-size afro, and that's fine. But he was a big, fat guy wearing really tight pants, so the bell-bottoms, like, didn't cover. They're supposed to go over your shoes, and these bell-bottoms came to about ankle-high, you know?
Yeah, so what?
Fine.
Man, you're talking about Woodstock. I've seen some of the funkiest-looking crackers in that movie ever seen.
No question. I'm not going to argue with you. I just, you know, I'm telling you right now, I want to find Wattstacks. I want to own Wattstacks. I want to have that movie to watch over and over.
Yeah, so you can see all the funny-looking black people?
No, you jackass. There was some good stuff on there. Staple Singers are on there. Marvin Gaye's on there. You know.
Well, what did you guys talk about Wattstacks anyway?
It was a concert in the early 70s. Robert, what was it?
It was a concert in the early 1970s. They had Stax Records sponsored it. And it was, you know, about Watts and South Central L.A. and all that.
Right. It was during a whole period of time where the empowerment of South Central L.A. was first on the... It was very top of mind with a lot of people, so they had, like, the... I went to the Watts Jazz Festival. They had a Shrine Auditorium, and they had the... They were plugging the Watts Towers big, and there was all kinds of Watts Arts and Crafts festivals going on, because Watts had just had the riots.
Yeah.
Well, you're real excited about it, huh?
No, I just don't... I'm not really familiar.
Anyway, Wattstacks was a concert they had at the Coliseum around 71, 72, something like that. And they had every big name act in urban or what was called R&B or whatever you want to call it.
Black music.
Okay, black music. Although black music could be jazz music, too. So anyway, it was 1972, Jason just told me.
Yeah, you want to get a copy of that movie? I'd like to see it, too.
Well, I mean, it's probably on Amazon, but I mean, I tried to steal it off of YouTube, because even though I do believe in respecting people's copyrights, unless they take it down, I mean, you know, so...
Yeah, you shouldn't do that.
All right, I shouldn't do it. I'll buy it, man. Where is it? So, here's some of the people they had. The Staple Singers, Rufus Thomas, Kim Weston, Isaac Hayes, Richard Pryor. It was a pretty good show, you know. But I'm telling you, man, some of the outfits, holy God.
Well, what else they have?
Oh, my God, man, they got cats in big, long fur coats with those big-ass Superfly hats. And
man, those Superfly hats was radical. I wish that I would like to have one of those.
Well, those big-ass Superfly hats, everybody wore the white guys wore those. But there was something about black guys with fur coats wearing those. And they had, and the chicks...
They were slamming some of those women.
Oh, yeah, everything is just sprayed on, man, and the big-ass afros and really tight little jeans and pants and boots all the way up to their thighs. Oh, yeah. So, anyway, I was watching this thing, and I was thinking, good Lord Almighty, man, where can I find this? And I don't know where I was watching it. It might have been on one of the channels, you know.
Whatever happened at Phil Henry Film Festival, what you was going to have?
Phil Henry Film Festival. Let me tell you about the Phil Henry Film Festival. What I wanted to do was an all-nighter at a drive-in. Well, you know how easy that is to find a drive-in these days? Forget it, man.
There ain't no drive-in around here.
I don't know if there's any drive-ins in L.A. The last drive-in movie I went to was in 1993, and it was in St. Paul, Minnesota, and it was in August, and I saw The Fugitive and The Coneheads. And
really?
Yeah, that's what I saw at the drive-in movie in St. Paul, Minnesota. That's the last drive-in theater I've ever been to. I think it's sad, but you know, I mean, everybody's watching Netflix. Everybody does what everybody wants to do. The communal experience of watching movies is probably not that big of a thing anymore. But if you're going to watch flicks with other people and have a good time doing it, like a drive-in is awesome. I mean, you're laying on the hood of the car and all that stuff.
Yeah, I've seen people do it. It looks pretty good. I don't know where you're going to find a place like that, though.
Now, here is the Wattstacks 30th Anniversary Special Edition is out on DVD. You can buy it on Amazon.com along with the pedophile book. Thank you very much. So I...
Are you kidding me?
Well, I'm sure he was joking. All right, let's get into this hour. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Our number 877-876-PHIL. Our website, philhenryshow.com. If you want to take a look at a live streaming video of our show, it's on right now. And I don't know what you're feeling. And by the way, we are going to be upgrading within the year to HD, baby. So, you know, everybody is, we're all on that fast track, man. But if ever there was a radio show worth looking at, it's ours. In fact, I don't think there's another radio show out there that's worth watching other than ours. Pentagon confident that the mystery missile was a plane. Now, this was a story that people were just agog and aghast over. And there's a few pea brains that probably want you to believe there's a, you know, Martian or something behind all of this. But it was a missile, or what people thought was a missile, leaving a trail of smoke on its journey to who knows where, high over the Pacific Ocean, off of Southern California the other day. Now, around here in the Channel Islands area, we're very used to seeing these contrails and weird-ass things because we have Vandenberg Air Force Base up the coast. But Pentagon officials were more confident Wednesday that a video of a condensation trail in the sky off the coast of Southern California was made by an aircraft, not a missile. Because the Pentagon couldn't explain it.
Yeah, but how are we doing it? Done like another country shot a missile at us or some stuff.
Man, what country gonna send a missile to us?
You ever heard of Korea? Oh, smoked.
Korea.
Man, are you crazy?
That's what they wanted to do.
It's not Korea. I know that's what they said they wanted to do, but that wasn't Korea, okay?
What's that mean, mystery meat?
It doesn't say mystery meat. It says mystery missile, okay?
Oh.
Boy, do you need glasses, man.
Yeah.
Anyway, it says here the Pentagon is more confident than ever that the missile there on Wednesday, this video, is of an aircraft. There's no evidence to suggest that this is anything else other than a condensation trail from an aircraft, said Pentagon spokesman Colonel Dave Lappin. Lappin declined to state definitively that the Defense Department believed the trail was caused by an airplane, but he said there was greater confidence that that was the case because more information about the incident had been analyzed since late Tuesday. He would not go into detail about the new information. All of those factors together leave us pretty confident that this was a contrail caused by an aircraft. The video footage shot from a televised television news helicopter just before sunset Monday of what looked like a missile set off fierce speculation about a rogue launch or a secret government test. Of course, Mick West, who runs a website devoted to contrails, knew it was an airplane the moment he saw the video. And as a matter of fact, we got some audio here. Let's listen to this. This is MIT professor Ted Postal. Boy, there's a great name for a guy that's talking about stuff that people aren't sure about. Ted Postal, whose experience is technology, defense, and national security, tells CNN that the mystery missile is probably an actual missile or a rocket.
It certainly appears to be a missile that was shot into the air. The video appears to have be tracking the object after what looks like a separation between two rocket stages. There's a later part of the video that has a bright point of light followed by a very dilute contrail, not nearly as intense as the contrail at lower altitude. That's typical also for a rocket motor.
Oh, that guy doesn't know his ass.
You don't know. You're not a missile expert.
You ought to tell him about one you've seen.
All right, that's a good point, Rob. I'm going to tell you about what I saw coming home from work about 5 years ago in just a second. Here is defense expert John Pike. He tells CNN the missile is just a plane or a vehicle of some sort. This interview was conducted over Skype, and the audio is less than optimal because while this guy's talking about missiles and high technology, he can't afford diddly squat.
A vehicle at the tip of the contrail is moving far too slowly to be a rocket. Since the contrail is illuminated by the sunset, you're able to see hundreds of miles of it all the way to the horizon. Mm-hmm. This creates an optical illusion that it was fired out of the ocean a few dozen miles away.
All right, so in other words, that was an airplane and not the missile.
That is a threat.
Okay.
On the radio.
Now, here's what I saw coming home from work about 6 years ago. Thank you for reminding me, Robert.
Well, you're not a missile expert.
Hold on for a minute. I'm going to tell you how something you see can be completely different from what you think it is. I'm driving home from work, and I'm coming up the 101 freeway. I'm heading north out of the metropolitan area of Los Angeles, and I'm heading now to the outer ring suburbs to the north and to the west. And as I'm motoring along, the sun is setting in the west, and it was later at night, so there was kind of a nice orange hue and a relatively moderate level of traffic, as you might imagine. Up in the sky are what look like two headlights.
What?
Hold on, will you?
This is great, man.
It looks like two headlights. Two lights. I mean, what the hell is that? I've never seen anything like that. They're not stars. It's too close. I can detect a little bit of movement. Okay. And as these two lights continued to glow and glow and glow and come forward, they began to move together. And they became one light. Now, you know, if I was any kind of a paranoid, weird guy, I'd think, oh, my God, Martians, right? Well, I was looking at this thing, and I know that Vandenberg's up there, so I'm thinking this has got to be some kind of, I don't know what they shot, but I see these two lights. They come together into one light, and then the lights disappear, and what is created is a large purple cloud of smoke.
You're okay, that's it. You're full of crap.
Will you listen to me, man?
Hold on, man.
Just listen. The lights disappeared in a large purple cloud that began to emanate, I'd say, almost a quarter of a length across the sky. It was huge. What the hell did I just look at? I got home, and Maria and the kids were on the front lawn watching this. Everybody in the neighborhood was out on the front lawn, and they're looking at this. Well, what it turned out to be, Vandenberg had shot two missiles. Now, I don't know what the terminal, I think they were Minutemen. Is that right? I don't know. They went from Vandenberg Air Force Base to the Marshall Islands in the South Pacific in 20 minutes. 20 minutes. That was what the paper said the next day. And what I was looking at was the second stage jettisoning these two missiles. So I saw the initial launch, or I saw the rocket as it was, I guess, going into some kind of a suborbital flight, and then the second stage turned into just this big purple cloud, and I didn't see diddly squat after that, except for this big purple cloud on those two lights.
Yeah, but you're making up what it looked like.
Why would I make that up, man? I've never seen anything like that before in my life. Anyway, the next day in the news, they said it was Minutemen missiles, and they went from Vandenberg to the Marshall Islands. I got to get out a map or something and find out how far that is. Man, that's a long damn way. We'll be back here on the Phil Hendry Show. Amazon.com lands in hot water, plus NCIS had the most viewers last night, but which show won the all-important 18 to 49 demo? Three guesses, the first two don't count. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Very quickly, CBS scored its usual Tuesday win thanks to NCIS, which once again pulled in close to 20 million viewers. Glee, meanwhile, fell off some from its last couple original episodes, but it had the best numbers among 18 to 49-year-old adults, which is a very significant demographic. 25 to 54 is also significant, given the baby boomers, et cetera, and the Gen X people. But 1849 is huge, and Glee won in that category, and that's Fox. And Fox seems to do very, very well each and every week in that group. So NCIS won 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, Dancing with the Stars had 16 million viewers. And at 10 o'clock, The Good Wife, 12 million viewers. So you see the big winner of the night, NCIS, that's because all the 90-year-old people.
Really? I like that show.
Yeah, so whatever, man. I don't even watch that crap. I can't stand watching that.
Why, man? I mean, that show is all about cop, you know, stuff that you like.
I'd rather see real cop stuff, man, not jive-ass cop stuff, which is what those CBS shows are. Pedophile Guide stirs Amazon controversy. That's right, a self-published book that has made its way to Amazon's cyber shelves. Self-published means some jive turkey wrote this book and published it himself as what they call a vanity press. A self-published book that has made its way to Amazon's cyber shelves is causing some to call for its removal. Others have gone even further and are calling for a boycott of the online retailer. The book, The Pedophile's Guide to Love and Pleasure, A Child Lover's Code of Conduct by Philip R. Greaves II, is available as an e-book in the Kindle store. The self-published book is described with misspellings by the author in the product description on the site. This is my attempt to make pedophile situations safer for those juveniles that find themselves involved in them by establishing certain rules for these adults to follow. I hope to achieve this by appealing to the better nature of pedosexuals, with hope that their doing so will result in less hatred and perhaps lighter sentences, L-I-T-E-R, should they ever get caught. On Twitter, the best way for lots of people to raise their collective voices quickly, users have called for Amazon to remove the book. Author and blogger Kristen Welch tweeted, "Dear Lord, do you really want the Force, a.k.a. mom bloggers, boycotting you? Remove this book," linking it to the book's page. Others went ahead and called for a boycott. A typical post came from John Sutton in the UK, who wrote, "Not buying anything from Amazon until this appalling title is removed," and et cetera, et cetera. Well, that's the power of the pocketbook, I guess.
Well, what do you think, man? You think this guy wrote a good book?
I didn't say that, did I?
Yeah, but you're very reluctant to condemn it, and that's what ought to be done.
Hold on for a minute. Yes, I condemn it. But I also think it's one of those very weird works, you know? It's like, yeah, I condemn it, okay?
Yeah, but what do you mean? But. What do you mean by but?
Well, how do I say this? It's odd. It's like it's a strange book written by a guy who is so messed up in the head, so probably molested as a kid himself, that he's trying to make sense out of his own illness. And he wrote this book that is a sort of found item. It's a weird thing you find in the sand. You know, you don't know whether to throw it away or laminate it and put it on the wall. It's a book where he's trying to set down rules for these sick bastards that are damaging these children. I think it is a guy trying to wrestle with his own demons. And I think it's a guy that was trying to wrestle with his own sickness, and he wrote this book, and now a bunch of jive-ass mothers are out there buying this crap, you know?
I don't know, man. Your reasons are weird.
Yeah, I don't understand what you're saying.
I'm just telling you that there are things in life. Look at Ed Wood. How come Ed Wood is famous?
Because he's made Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Is it a good movie?
I think it's pretty good.
You think that's good?
Yeah, what's wrong with it?
Plan 9 from Outer Space. Do you know why that movie's famous?
Yeah, because it's bitching.
It sucks.
No, man, you got it all wrong. Plan 9 from Outer... No, I know it's not that good now, but back then that was state-of-the-art.
State-of-the-art? Oh, I see. So paper plates with strings attached was state-of-the-art in the 50s, huh?
Yeah.
No, man. No, it wasn't.
Yeah, it wasn't. The 50s, they had nothing they could do.
Really? You ever heard of King Kong?
What do you mean, the movie?
No, man. The real monkey. Yeah, the movie. They had stop-action animation in the 30s, dude. That's how they did King Kong and that whole movie. They had stop-action claymation, all that stuff.
Well...
Yeah. So they... What do you mean, strings and paper plates? So Ed Wood is famous because he sucked, but he was so, he never gave up sucking. He was like, just sticking to it, man, I'm going to suck until the day I die, and by God, he became famous for sucking. So we'll all take heart with that.
I don't know.
Well, that's what I mean, and there's something that's attractive to us about these weird asses that do these odd things. Anyway, we'll be back with more. Nancy Pelosi, they want to get rid of her. Speaking of a weird ass, Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, speaking of...
Phil Hendry.
Speaking of Ed Wood.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here. Here's a news flash for you on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, where you can go to philhendryshow.com right now and get yourself a backstage pass. What are you looking at, bud?
I just think Marshall Islands is bitching. See, right here is Micronesia, and then there's that. Then this is where they are.
Yeah, I know, but we're well past that story, so thank you very much. The Marshall Islands, thank you. I told Bud that that's where we were aiming, you know, Minuteman missiles for, and now you're a Marshall Islands fan, huh?
Yeah, look at that. 1, 2, 3, 4... 5, 6.
Don't count all of the island. Just take it over there and do it. Here is a news flash. Air travel for the Thanksgiving holiday is expected to increase slightly over last year in response to a stronger economy. But here's the facts. The facts, Jack, are this. More people will fly over the Thanksgiving weekend than they usually do. All right. The Air Transport Association of America, the industry trade group for the nation's largest airlines, predicted that the number of air travelers would increase by 3.5% over last year to 24 million. It is reassuring to see travel levels rebounding, said Association President James C. May. Let's hope that people don't continue to bitch and moan and complain about how they're getting cattle cart around. I know that things are tough for them, but things are good for us, and that's the way it's going to be. The forecast for holiday travel continues to trend, the trend of increasing demand and higher fares for the airline industry. What couldn't be better? The Automobile Club of Southern California won't release its holiday travel forecast until next week, but a spokeswoman said the report is also expected to predict an increase. So what does this mean? So the economy is getting a little bit better, or we've saved about as much money as we think we're going to save, and we still have to go to grandma's house, or what does that mean? It means that things are tight, but we're learning to live within how tight things are. And you know, if you look at it, and you look at it objectively, everything sucks. The hiring's down. Nobody's selling anything. People are barely hanging on to their jobs. A whole lot of people are out of work. But I'm sorry if I sound cynical, but when I heard Susie, what's her ass? You know.
What's that lady? Orman.
Orman. Is that her name? And, oh, my God, we're going to be in bread lines. And, oh, my God, it's going to be 10 years of a depression. You know, I get so sick and tired of these people with a political agenda in mind. They decide that they're going to paint the worst-case scenario because, what, you're tired of being wrong, Susie? To quote the great Francesco Quinn in Platoon, you ain't never been right. All right. Democrats pressing Pelosi to step aside. In a fresh sign of turmoil among defeated Democrats, a growing number of the rank and file say they will not support House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, even if she was gold-plated, in a politically symbolic roll call when the new Congress meets in January. Said Illinois Representative Mike Quigley, one of several Democrats who's sick to death of the whole thing, the reality is she's politically toxic, if you know what I mean, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, he said, holding his nose. He says that pressure to Pelosi to step aside as her party's leader in the wake of the historic election losses to Republicans last week is mounting. Well, I don't understand why it would be a shock to anybody. Last week, Pelosi startled many Democrats with a quick post-election announcement that she would run for minority leader. She's yet to draw an opponent for the post. Now, I could be, and I'm saying this completely in a very objective way, but I'm looking at her. And I'm looking at Boehner, and I'm not a fan of Boehner, but I will tell you this. Boehner did what he wanted to do, which is to stop, for the most part, the Democrats' agenda. Now, health care reform got passed, but it was badly mauled in the process. And finance reform got passed, and that, too, is politically suspect. But Pelosi, in the time that she's been the Speaker of the House, and I'm just like I said, if I was Obama, sometimes I wonder if Obama is laying low or playing patty cake with these people, because this is a guy to become President of the United States, to be a black man and get elected President of the United States. Don't even kid yourself and think that it's a cakewalk. Now, there's a lot of people out there that think, oh, what's the difference? White, black, it's America. Oh, come on, grow up. He's black, and that guy had to, I don't know what deals he had to cut. But with that arm of the party, he probably had to make all kinds of promises, and he's got to play patty cake with these jackballs. At some point, Mr. President, you have to say to them the following thing. Thank you for your support. Thank you very much for getting me elected president. Now I am the president, and you can all pound sand. I don't care what happens to you. You can choke for all I care. I'm going to get this thing done, man. And if that means that I got to hair lip everybody on Bear Lake, that's what I'm going to do.
That's the funniest thing I ever heard.
I'm quoting Dr. Strangelove.
You saw that on a movie?
Yeah, I saw that on Strangelove.
But who said it?
Slim Pickens' character, the guy in the bomber. Anyway, Pelosi elections are, party elections rather, are scheduled for next week. In the interim, Pelosi's critics have become more vocal. There's starting to be a sense that this may not be as much of a done deal as people might have. A done deal? Are you people smoking just big, fat, BC bud, man? It's, what are you talking about? A done deal. Don't you cats want to, like, do something? That woman, Pelosi, has never, ever, ever, ever done you guys any favors at all. Did you see what happened to Grayson? Here's a guy, this Grayson, who thought that he was on the cutting edge of the new political wave in America. Well, he got his ass handed to him. And Pelosi ain't too far away from him. You guys in the Democratic Party, I'm telling you, There's nothing wrong with having a, you know, Roosevelt-style vision. You know, that served the country well at one point. Maybe it can serve the country well again. But you're going to have to get off of this, get off that Grayson Pelosi bandwagon, man. People think it's punk. You understand? Nobody sees that as American or strong or patriotic. Nothing. It sucks. It's odious. If enough people come out and voice a little discomfort with the idea of her continuing on, maybe she would reconsider, said the Pennsylvanian. This guy, Jason Altmaier, one of Pelosi's opponents, I guess, one of a handful of Democrats who said he won't cast a ceremonial vote for her. The election of a party leader occurs behind closed doors. Yeah, I'll bet it does. A separate election for Speaker to be held on January 5th. A few hours
later. But what do you think?
I don't know, man, but I'm telling you, if somebody said to Phil Hendry, would you walk into the Democrats and then walk into the Republicans? I could sit down with both Democrats and Republican, and I could give them the lay of the land. Now, I'm not saying they'd be bright enough to listen to it. I'm not saying they'd be bright enough to know what to do with it. Okay? But I am telling you, I could tell them what it is they need to do. I could tell the Democrats what they need to do to make Obama presidential again and to get out of his way, because they got to get out of his way. They're screwing him up, man, worse than you could, than I bet you he ever thought possible. They are no friend to him, man. All of those jackballs in Congress, those Democrats, man, they're making his life so tough. I could tell them, too. But they ain't bright enough. Neither are those Republicans. Those are the same Republicans who said that it was $200 million a day for Obama to get his ass carted around India. You ready for that?
Yeah, but I thought they figured that out.
No, they didn't. Figured out what?
That's how much it cost.
No, it don't cost that much. $200 million a day. A day. We could build a fighter jet a day with $200 million. If we could afford that, man, we could carry ourselves out of national debt. $200 million a day? No, it wasn't $200 million, but you had these people who were quoting that number like it was gospel, and one of them was a congresswoman by the name of that Bachman. Dumb doesn't even begin to describe that woman. Stupid? Oh, my God, is she stupid. And I don't just mean that $200 million a day. Every time she opens her mouth, she hasn't got anything really concrete to say. There's no real facts and figures. What she starts spitting up is ideology. She's like the Republican version of that clown they had down there in Florida that they kicked his ass out. And in many ways, the Republican version of Pelosi and the rest of these ideologues that have no interest whatsoever in fact. No interest at all in fact. All right, where else do we want to go, man?
Yeah, do this one. This is really good.
This one is really good. Amnesty prosecute Bush for admitted waterboarding. Really?
Yeah.
Amnesty International making a bid to become as irrelevant as they possibly can and almost to become a walking joke. Now Amnesty is saying that President George Bush should be prosecuted because he admitted that he okayed the waterboarding. Yes, he did admit that he okayed the waterboarding, and he said that he admitted okaying the waterboarding after he talked to lawyers. Lawyers! The United States must prosecute former President Bush for torture if his admission in a memoir that he authorized waterboarding holds true, rights group Amnesty International said on Wednesday. Not having enough to do, what with the torture and the mayhem that is committed throughout the world, Amnesty International Senior Director Claudio Cojones said in a statement, under international law, anyone involved in torture must be brought to justice. That does not exclude form of the... Yeah, what did you do, Claudio, in your last life, huh? You strutting around with something you bought out of Army Surplus? I bet you had a couple of little stars there on the bill of your hat. If his admission is substantiated, the USA has the obligation to prosecute him. In the absence of a U.S. investigation, other states must step in and carry out such an investigation themselves. What a disgrace for Amnesty International, which at one time they tell me did good work. I don't know what they do anymore. I don't think they do anything anymore. I think they wag their fingers at people. I don't think they do it. I think where the real pain and the real suffering and the real torture and the real torment of the world's people is taking place, I don't think Amnesty International has the guts to go within 1,000 miles of the place where the real horror is taking place. Do you guys make big public statements about homosexuals being executed publicly in Iran? Are you making big, big statements about the things that are happening to women in some of these states, children in some of these states? racial minorities in some of these states, it continues to go on. It's been going on for 100 years. What do you guys do? What do you say? Nothing. And you don't, it isn't even saying something. What do you do about it? Nothing. And you know why? Because you guys haven't got the guts it takes to step on a fly. You got guts enough for writing press releases. That's what you do. I won't give another dime to your organization because you insult me as an American. And I believe American law and the American Justice Department before I believe Claudio Quijones of the Amnesty International Jive-Ass section. In an interview with Matt Lauer of the Today Show this week, President Bush explained his decision to use waterboarding.
We believe America is going to be attacked again. There's all kinds of intelligence coming in. And one of the high-valued Al-Qaeda operatives was Khalik Sheikh Mohammed, the chief operating officer of Al-Qaeda, ordered the attack on 9/11. And they say, he's got information. I said, find out what he knows. And so I said to our team, are the techniques legal? And a legal team says, yes, they are. And I said, use them.
Now, President Bush has asked why he thought waterboarding was legal, which I think he just said, but he says it again.
Because the lawyer said it was legal. He said it did not fall within the Anti-Torture Act. I'm not a lawyer. But you got to trust the judgment of people around you, and I do.
And guess what else happened? I hate to break the news, but when President Obama became the chief executive and he had a new attorney general and a new Justice Department and there was an intelligence committee investigation headed up by Dianne Feinstein, and they were just digging to find out whether they could put these guys on trial, these guys, the Justice Department of the Bush administration, guess what? Uh-uh.
They don't put Bush on trial, though. Did they look into that?
Who?
Pelosi's not the president, right?
No, Pelosi's not the president. Oh, my God.
Are you an idiot, man? Obama's the president. We're talking about Bush, though.
They looked into it, and they didn't find diddly squat. Are you guys listening to me? Holder looked into it and didn't find jack. He didn't want to press charges. He didn't want to bring charges. Why? No evidence. And as I said on the show the other night, because you guys were bugging me about this.
Yeah, well, Obama could have said, I don't want to do it on account of, you know, everybody would be sad.
Obama can't do that. He can't say to the attorney general, do me a favor here, Eric. Even though you have evidence of a crime being committed, you can't really prosecute Bush because everybody will be sad. So don't do it.
Why not?
Because that's a violation of the law. He's the chief law enforcement officer of the country, the president of the United States. And he says to the attorney general, I don't want you prosecuting this crime, even though you have evidence, because politically it's bad for the country. You talk about impeachment. That's impeachable. Forget about this horse dung about whether or not this is legal or that's legal when it comes to waterboarding and the legal definition of torture, which I give it to you. Go ahead and look at the Geneva Conventions and you tell me what torture is. If you look at the Geneva Conventions, making somebody cry because you tell them that their shirt's ugly, that's torture.
What?
Yeah, go ahead, man. Any discomfort, mental or physical. So put that in your pipe and smoke it. All right, we're going to come back with our final segment of the show. Women-only swim hour for Muslims makes waves on campus. Well, why would that happen? Because, you know, the Muslims, man, they're free to be and free to groove, baby. You know, man, I don't be swimming with no chicks, especially when they're wearing a bag. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Brother, quit being a racist, man.
Oh, pfft.
Phil Hendry.
All right, in an attempt to be inclusive to all religious traditions on campus, last week George Washington University in Washington, D.C. started Sisters Splash, a ladies-only swim hour, according to the university newspaper. The school's Lerner Health and Wellness Center closed the pool to men and covered the glass door with a dark tarp, giving female Muslim students the chance to swim at their leisure while honoring the basic tenets of their religion. Everything was going swimmingly, if you'll pardon the joke. And co-eds shed their head and body gear and rocked swimsuits, at least until scores of critics began hurling heated comments that continue to pour in on various blogs and news reports. Should a minuscule minority force the overwhelming majority to abide by their rules, or should it be the other way around, as one of the internet comments about the female-only swim? Others conclude, come on, folks, an hour a week, what's the big deal? It's not an unreasonable request. Women is like half the population. Well, but not Muslim women. Not Muslim women. They're not half the population. And we've got this thing in our country, and I know it sounds completely insane, but we got this thing whereby if you have a religion, which is fine, you can have a religion, but you don't get to tell me how to live with your religion. Now, that's how it works in America. Yes, but you see, Phil, my religion, I don't, that's fine, man. It ain't my religion. You understand? Well, I can tell you when my kid's going to, no, you can't, because it's a minor, and now you're putting that child at risk if you say that child shouldn't have a blood transfusion because of your religion. Now we have to step in. Society has to step in. Why? Because you may kill that kid. Well, if I kill that kid, that's my business. No, it's not your business. It's our business now, because we protect children underage. That child cannot make up its own mind. They can't make a decision for themselves, so they look to a responsible adult, and you as the responsible adult, you're keeping medical service from that child. And why is that? Because of your religion. Well, guess what? Take your religion and stick it sideways. How do you feel about that? Now, see, this is what we're afraid to say in this country all of a sudden. I don't understand it. You can read the founding. I got a lot of people talking about the founding fathers. You can read the founding fathers. And they'll tell you plenty about what they thought of religion, and it ain't all that flattering either. But the fact of the matter is, we do not prohibit religion in this country. You can celebrate religion until the cows come home. You don't get to tell me. And when it comes into conflict with the greater good or the greater processes and commerce and business of a society, then guess who loses? You got it, your religion. That doesn't mean that you are put in jail. It doesn't mean that you don't get to celebrate religion. It means you don't get to tell us what to do. So I have a company, and I have to get my product out. And my religious employees, my Muslim employees, well, they want to take off a half hour or whatever the hell to do their prayers. But we can't do that right now. So you're all fired. And if I got a school and I have a pool and I want to make that pool available to my students and the students are not having access to the pool because I got to close it off because I need to have a time for my Muslim women to go and swim, well, that ain't going to happen either. But what's happened in America, we don't do that anymore. In America, we're so, forgive me, we're so lacking in intestinal fortitude that we don't even know when something is common sense like that. Well, you can't do this because, you know, it's messing around. Well, my religion, that's great. I'm so happy you got a religion, okay? You get to wear your beanie. Go off and do whatever you want. You're not going to get in here and do it here because it's messing stuff up. Well, you're not washing your feet in my drinking fountain. No.
Why can't he?
Well, because, what do you mean, why can't he? I'm drinking out of it. That's why he can't. All right. That's it, man. I think we had a couple of other things, but you know what? I don't have enough time to do them justice. I can tell you about the little online research project that Jason just did for me, but it has nothing to do with anything we were talking about.
Go ahead, man. What was it?
The longest sniper kill in history, a mile and a half, by a Canadian Special Forces guy.
That's bitching.
Yeah, it's real bitching. All right, The Phil Hendry Show, produced by Jason Rantz. Our technical director is Charles Wagon. And, of course, our associate producer and screener is Dan Northcraft. Great job tonight, guys. Fantastic job. Don't forget The Phil Hendry Show website, philhendryshow.com. Stay tuned tomorrow or Friday at the latest. Very, 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 very special announcement for our listeners in Los Angeles. And we are also going to be announcing the opening of our merchandise store online at philhendryshow.com very soon. Check out our show log after the show tonight at philhendryshow.com.
Phil Hendry.